This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
We get people even telling us they chose where to buy a house based on our map. And with the recent wildfires in California, we had a lot of feedback of people that were very grateful for having access to the data and being able to make decisions based on it.
Northern California's now infamous Camp Fire was not only the largest, longest, and deadliest wildfire in the state's history, it also produced record amounts of smoke. Schools closed, there was a run on protective masks, and people were fashioning do-it-yourself air purifiers because there were none left in stores. And it looks like we'll only see an acceleration of wildfires in the future. This grim forecast has brought a surge in traffic to websites that monitor air quality like AirNow, Weather Underground, and Purple Air. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak with the founder and CEO of Purple Air, a company that sells laser air quality sensors for home use at a reasonable price and posts all the results in real time on its site. We discuss Purple Air's business model, its unique brand of crowdsourcing technology, and examine the ways that it casts the world in a different and sometimes frightening light. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Adrien Dibwad. He's the founder and CEO of Purple Air. Adrien, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Hello, Alex. Thank you.
Why don't you tell our listeners who aren't familiar with Purple Air what your product does?
So our sensor is an air quality sensor that will tell you if there's smoke or air pollution in the air outside your house or inside your house. And we have a map that will display all of the data so that you can see what's going on in the air around you.
And how does this differ from what somebody might get in terms of information if they just used Siri on their phone and said, Siri, what's the air quality today? They get something from the EPA. And how does Purple Air differ in that sense?
So Purple Air is providing real-time data. Generally, the EPA sensors are going to be a little bit delayed, so they work on hourly averages at the highest resolution, normally even 8 hours or 24-hour averages. So you're sort of seeing what happened a couple of hours ago, because not only the averaging, but then there's a delay on publishing the data. Whereas with Purple Air, you see it just about a minute or two after the actual reading.
And why don't you give us a peek into the technology, the idea of the crowdsourcing of this data, and maybe the inspiration behind it, if you will.
Yeah, so we live in Draper, Salt Lake City, Draper, which is south of Salt Lake City. And it's a very windy location. And this gravel pit would generate a lot of dust every day. And I just wondered how much dust there really was in the air. And then I set about looking for a sensor. We found this laser counter, which is a really accurate way of measuring particles that are in the air. And we made a sensor, made a map, and got the sensor uploading data to the map. So one of our philosophies is to produce the data and make it freely available. You do not need to log in. You don't need to be a member. You don't need to pay anything to get access to the data. You can just look at the map and see the data in real time.
And you make your money through selling the product itself? Why don't you kind of give us a glimpse into the business model?
So we do make money from selling the sensors in order to pay for the whole system. And so part of the hosting costs and everything is incorporated into the sensor cost itself. It is a very low-cost sensor. It's about $230 for the device. You know, that's comparing them to the more expensive ones out there, $6,000 to $30,000 that the EPA uses. These have been compared to those sensors by the South Coast Air Quality Management District in their AQ spec program. And the correlation, the R squared that we've found, is about 97% to the EPA certified sensors. So the actual trends that they produce are very, very accurate. And because we're counting particles, we tend to overestimate the mass of the particles. So depending on what pollutant is actually in the air, they have different densities, which means that we might measure a little bit more or a little bit less than what it really is. But it gives you a very good indication of the trends. If we are reading something that is in the air, there's going to be something in the air.
And I can imagine that your business has exploded with the concurrent explosion of wildfires and poor air quality out west. Just looking at the map, you see in the San Francisco Bay Area and the greater Los Angeles metropolitan area, there's tons and tons of these little circles that are either green, yellow, orange, red. Do you get a better sense of how the EPA functions after diving into this business more? And maybe kind of contrast how somebody who's going on to purple air in San Francisco and can see maybe 100 different circles in their region, how that may differ from the way the EPA would measure San Francisco's air quality.
Right. So we saw a huge increase in people wanting sensors over the wildfire season this year. I think we reached some critical mass or something where the media was publishing our map and people were looking at it and talking about it. And so we had a huge increase in orders. We've tried desperately to keep up with those and we are getting the backlog out. But the difference with us compared to the EPA in terms of monitoring is that the EPA sensors, I mean, some of these sites cost $250,000 a year to run and maintain. The sensors have to be maintained by highly skilled individuals. The sites have to be rented. There's facilities like the connections to the internet and a whole lot of different things that have to fall into place. So that's why they cost so much money. And so as a result, they've only got about five or six in the Salt Lake Valley. Somewhere like LA, they might have 10 or 20 monitoring stations around the metropolitan area. It might be more. I could stand to be corrected on that number. But it's a relatively small number. Whereas with these sensors, purple air sensors allow hundreds, if not thousands, of people to take part, to put it on their house. And so we have a lot more data points, and that gives us a higher resolution view of the pollution. You can now see subtleties of where it's more dense, where it's less dense, which direction it's moving in, and even in the future, we're looking at being able to detect the direction from which it's coming and therefore the source of the pollution as well.
And for somebody who's not on the website or has never checked it out, why don't you kind of explain the key, if you will?
Right. So on the map, we have a combination of indoor and outdoor sensors. The indoors are surrounded with a black ring to distinguish them from the outdoor sensors. Some people would say, well, what's the point of putting the indoor air quality meters on the map? Because it's not relevant if you're looking at outdoor air quality. Well, we tend to disagree, because if you know that the outdoor air quality is really bad, seeing the indoor on the same map is great, because it gives you the difference. So you can see, well, in generally people's houses are well insulated against the pollution and they've got good air quality, or in some cases not. And you can get an idea of what the effect of outdoor air pollution is on indoor air pollution. And also being able to see other people's indoor air quality tells you how well you're doing or what you can get to in terms of quality of air inside your house.
Yes, I know that when there's wildfire smoke, there's certain rooms where I suffer a little bit more. So just in your own house, you can kind of get a better idea of the variation.
Absolutely. And things like cooking, if you burn your toast or if you're cooking bacon or something like that, frying on the stove produces quite a bit of pollution as well. And so you'll see a bunch of different sources indoors. And also, you know, an air cleaner that has a HEPA filter works really, really well. You can get them quite cheaply from places like Walmart for under $100, especially built one. Or you can even get a box fan from Home Depot. Put a HEPA filter, one of the highest rated filters you can, on that fan, just, you know, using some bungees or something, and run that in your house, and it does a really good job of cleaning out the air. HEPA filters, or the highest rated filters that you get from Home Depot, are very, very effective. You can put something together for like $40 from Home Depot.
And I think a lot of people were having to do that in the Bay Area a few weeks ago because all the air filter machines were sold out. There was a run on them. So you were pretty much relegated to figuring out how to do it yourself.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people don't realize just how simple it is to make an effective air filter using one of the Home Depot filters, you know, that you use on your furnace. And we actually did that recently here in our facility where we've got a bit of a bigger space, and the normal sort of Walmart HEPA filters were a little bit small to clean the air in the huge space, and taking a box fan and a furnace filter from Home Depot really works very well.
Well, I'm going to set one up after we have this conversation. So looking at San Francisco's map, why don't you explain the key a little bit more in detail? So I'm looking at some green circles that don't have a black around them. So that means they're outside. But then right next to that, there's some yellow. And just to give our listeners an idea, so the number range for the outside is anywhere from 25 to 61. I'm looking at 63, all within, you know, a few miles of my house in San Francisco. And then most of the ones that have black circles around them, which are indoors, are in the single digits. They're pretty low. But there is one aberration there. And I've noticed that looking at this for the last few weeks and trying to understand how it works. There's usually an outlier. And I don't know how to take that as a consumer. I see one big red dot like on Market Street. That's an indoor one. And it says 159. And it's this huge red blob. Should I be scared of that big red blob? What does that mean?
So it depends. If you are the owner of that sensor and that's in your house, then you might have cause for concern, because if it's constantly reading that and the sensor is in good health, then your air quality inside is continuously bad. Now, sometimes if you burn your toast in the morning and you don't open the windows or you don't have any fresh air coming into the house, that pollution can linger around for a very long time and you'll be breathing it continuously. And the longer you breathe it for, the worse it is for you. If you look at the graph for that sensor when you click on it, you'll see that the graph actually does go down to close to zero. So that tells me, and you can see that the trends are going up and down between those numbers and zero. And that tells me that the sensor is actually very likely to be good. So that pollution is basically coming from somewhere in that house. And it's something that once you're aware of it, you might be able to do something about it. So either, you know, don't burn your toast or open the doors and windows for a bit to clean it out. You know, you can actually remedy it quite quickly.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Adrien Dubois. He is the CEO and founder of Purple Air. You originally started trying to monitor your air out in Salt Lake City. You had a gravel pit nearby. What did you learn from that? Were you breathing in bad air because of the gravel pit? And I guess, did you get better information than you would have from, let's say, the EPA?
Yes, Alex. So we've been collecting data for some time now, for several years or 3 years or so, on that particular site. We still need to do some analysis on it, but you can from time to time see the plumes of dust coming off the gravel pit when the wind is blowing. We see plumes to the north and to the south of the site with the prevailing north or south winds. And so the nearest state sensor was about 20 miles away, 15 miles away in Salt Lake City itself. And so that sensor very seldom would pick up dust from that site unless the winds were incredibly strong and we had an unusual event. But our sensors are really close by, and so we do see plumes from time to time off the gravel pit.
Let's say somebody's concerned about a factory nearby. Why don't you give us kind of a bird's eye view of all the different types of air pollution one might be breathing and what you're able to monitor?
Okay, so this sensor actually detects particulates, which is a subcategory of air pollution. It is basically particles that are floating in the air. Our sensor itself counts particles from 0.3 microns up to 10 microns in size. The PM2.5, which is seen to be the more harmful type, is the smaller size particles, which is from 0.3 up to about 2.5 microns in size. The generators of this pollution can be diesel exhaust. It can be smoke from pizza ovens. It can be refineries. It can be dust from wind-borne processes or building sites. Just about smoke from wildfires. Just about anything that creates haze that you can see when you look across the city is going to be particulates. And there's a lot of different sources for it.
So we're talking about the hyperlocal advantages of purple air, but there's also the macro view that you get. So there's purple air participants all over the planet right now. Just looking at the wider map, I see like in India, there's one that's at 426, which is very high. And there's one in Vietnam and Hanoi that's at 286. And then there's one in, I think this might be in, I don't know what Paprikovac is, but perhaps some Eastern European country. And that's at 447. Those are very high numbers. So you've been monitoring this more than most laymen. Where are the serious hotspots on the planet?
So we do see the serious hotspots, the classic places like New Delhi. There's a bunch of other places in so the Asia that generally read very high, and this is not just short-term high readings, but long-term, weeks and months that we see these high readings. And one of the interesting things with Purple Air's network is that you can compare air quality in the U.S. to air quality in India to air quality in London, all on the same scale with the same device, whereas different government, like the government of the UK versus the government of the US, they have a slightly different health scale, what they consider to be harmful or not, and different color schemes, different numbers, different sensors calibrated in different ways. And so it's very hard to compare India to the UK to the US if you don't have the same sensor. So this gives us the ability to do that. And when you zoom out and you look across the world, you'll see places in Australia that in the wintertime when they are burning wood to keep them warm, there's very high levels of pollution. And the people in that town are very concerned about the pollution because they see it, they smell it, and that now they're measuring it. So we see in the wintertime when people are doing wood burning, for instance, that places can be as bad as India, as New Delhi, where there is very much less restrictions or control over air pollution. They do crop burning, stubble burning in certain times of the year, which generates a lot of smoke. And those people are living with that continuously. Then in the U.S., we get times where, for instance, in San Francisco with the wildfires, you were subjected to the same kinds of pollution levels as New Delhi has for weeks and months you had for weeks. And those are very high, 350, 450 type numbers, if not even higher. Purple air, very, very bad air quality.
Yes, I read an article in the New York Times that was profiling a rickshaw driver who rode a bicycle cab in New Delhi. And sometimes the levels would be in the 600s. And it would go in the 300-400 range for months at a time or weeks at a time. And I was really feeling the effects of the smoke in San Francisco, which was, to give people an idea, in the 150 to 250 range for about a week. And it was suffocating in a lot of ways. I can't imagine just living in that and trying to do something that involved a lot of cardio. The amount of particulate matter that some people in a place like New Delhi get must be horrific. And it should make us more conscious of our habits.
Absolutely. I mean, we find that people in San Francisco, for instance, in the recent fires, were getting desperate. They were actually really, it was like an emergency, it was like a disaster for them. They were very appreciative of being able to have access to the data that Purple Air provides to help them to escape the smoke or to know where it's less dense. And so, you know, they were using it for that purpose. But when you can't escape it and it's in your house, it's outside, you can start feeling really desperate. And that's what's happening in New Delhi, for instance. You know, it's a big subject there and people are desperate. It's a very, very bad situation. Now, if you think about smoking cigarettes, when someone smokes a cigarette, it lasts about 5 minutes and then it's over with and they're breathing the normal air again. But when you're breathing air pollution, you're breathing it continuously. And so if you were to compare the intensity of smoking a cigarette for 5 minutes spread out over a whole day, that amount of pollution that you're breathing is less from smoking than it is breathing 150 AQI for the whole day. So you can actually compare bad air quality to the number of cigarettes that you might be smoking in a day, and you'll find scales that will give you an idea of how many cigarettes they think you smoke today based on the air quality in your location. And if you think about it now, that you're actually forcing every single person in the population, including children, newborn babies, you know, elderly, every single person who's breathing that air is smoking that number of cigarettes a day, and then you can estimate or have a clearer understanding of how that impacts everyone's health and how the hospitals are dealing with different issues from people coming in with breathing related problems from that.
You would think that this recent outbreak of wildfires and the panic that overtook regions like mine here in the Bay Area would have really seeped into the public consciousness. But this last week, all of a sudden, we got some pretty dangerously high levels in the last week, just popping out of nowhere, even during rain. So people were wondering, where is this coming from? There's no more wildfires, correct? And there were some articles that came out demystifying it, saying a lot of it was attributed to people burning wood in their homes. Wood fires in San Francisco. And it was pretty surprising to me that people would be back to their old habits after going through what they just did.
Right. People do that kind of thing. One of the things that, for instance, the Coalition for Clean Air out of LA likes about the network is it gives them the ability to help raise awareness about air quality issues. The better the air quality gets over the years, like it has improved since the 70s, let's say, the more people forget about it. And then they go back to their old ways and they start, you know, not caring too much about their emissions anymore. And that causes the air quality to get worse again. So we know that burning wood for even, you know, it's really nice, the ambience of a fire and sitting in front of it, it's really, it reminds you of your childhood and the smell and everything. But you've got to understand that that has a very negative impact on the air quality for your neighbors. And also, sitting in a house with an open fire is very bad for the indoor air quality. There's a reason why in Africa and third world countries, the mortality rate is much lower than here. Your life expectancy is much lower than it is in the first world countries. And that's because they use open fires for cooking, for heating, a lot more than we do here. And so you're exposed to a lot more particulates when you live in a third world country, and it has a big effect on your health. When you have a fire once in a while here and you're breathing the particulates, you're standing around a campfire, it's not necessarily going to be very harmful immediately, but if you're exposed enough to it, it will affect your health in the long term. So people need to understand that when you live in a city, if you burn wood, you're causing very big problems. And in San Francisco, for instance, when the air is more stagnant and it's not moving, you don't have the wind to blow out the pollution, it's going to just stay in that area. It's going to collect and build up. And you add to that diesel exhaust from all the trucks, all the vehicles driving around, all the houses with the heating systems emitting their particulates and gases, and you start having a problem. It's time we all reach out for something new. That means you too. You say you want to lead up, but you can't seem to make up your mind. I think you better close it. And let me guide you to the purple rain. Purple rain, purple rain.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Adrien Dubois. He is the CEO and founder of Purple Air. So understanding the popularity of your product, you can kind of see where it's taken hold, and you see the West Coast is just, you got lots and lots of monitors. That seems to be the bulk of your business. From, let's say, Denver to like Detroit, though, there's just maybe a few dozen customers. I'm interested in why Middle America hasn't embraced the Purple Air phenomenon. Is their air better, or are they just late to the game?
I think it's a combination of the two. So they're maybe late to the game. They haven't heard about it yet. Once people start getting them in a certain area, then more people become aware and they start adding to the network. And I think in general, the air quality is a little bit better. What we find is on the West Coast, for instance, there's seasonal issues, like the wildfire season causes a lot of air quality problems. And in the middle of the country, you've got more air quality issues coming from things like oil and gas wells that might exist around those regions. And it's much more open and flat area. The wind might clear out the pollution a little bit more efficiently, and it doesn't get as high as often. But I think there's also less population in those areas in general. You know, you'll probably find that the density of the sensors on the map is very reflective of the actual density of the population. So there's the awareness issue. Once more people know about it, more people get sensors, but population density is going to play a role too.
So maybe you can give us an idea of some of the feedback you get. It must be pretty encouraging.
We are very encouraged by the feedback, and it makes our job worthwhile. We get people saying thank you for helping to manage their child's asthma better. We get people even telling us they chose where to buy a house based on our map. And with the recent wildfires in California, we had a lot of feedback of people that were very grateful for having access to the data and being able to make decisions based on it. So it makes it all very worthwhile, and we are very encouraged by the feedback. It tells us people really do care. People care about air quality in a very deep way.
Adrien Dubois, thank you so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
And Alex, thank you for your time and for all the support of all of our users.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Damien Escobar, Jimi Hendrix, and Prince. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.